With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. Chucky's All 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. The show is brought to you by EMP 180 Weight Loss, the standard for weight loss in the D.C. area. It's emp180weightloss.com. We'll get back into the Masters at 7:20. Jaime Diaz from Golf Channel's Live from the Master will join us. A little bit later in the show, Jay Beagle from the Washington Capitals for the morning skate. They just have one game left in the regular season. The playoffs will start next week. He will join us at 8:40. And speaking of the Capitals, we have tickets to give away this hour and throughout the remainder of the show. 7:55, 8:55, 9:55. Listen for your cue to call to win Washington Capitals tickets right here on the Junkies.
Nice.
Joining us right now to talk some movies is our pal Kevin McCarthy from Fox 5. Good morning,
JP.
Kevin.
Good morning, Kevin. JP. How are you, sir?
Where are you? You're in Fox 5 right now?
Yeah, I just got back from L.A. about 5 hours ago.
Oh. I usually don't have any questions for you, but there are a couple of movies coming out this week. I assume you're reviewing both.
Are you into Blockers? Blockers looks funny.
No.
Blockers? I don't know anything about it.
Well, just think about when we talk about C-blocking.
Yeah.
It's about
Dad's
a bunch of parents
their daughters.
Who want to stop their kids who make a pact
to do it
on prom night.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's kind of, at least in the trailer, it kind of looks like Superbad or, you know, one of these movies. So, you know,
my daughter's going to the prom in late April.
Oh, so you don't
my,
even
my
deal
son
with it.
Has prom tonight.
I should probably go see it. Yeah. But I usually don't have anything to ask you, but there's a couple movies coming out. I asked you about The Quiet Place, and then I asked you about Chappaquiddick. So can
yeah.
we start with The Quiet Place?
So, yeah. So I've seen Chappaquiddick. I'm sorry. I've seen The Quiet Place, and I've seen Blockers. Chappaquiddick I'm watching this weekend. I actually have it at home, but I was traveling yesterday and today. I was in L.A. for 22 hours for an interview with The Rock. So I was not able to watch Chappaquiddick.
Can't miss that interview with The Rock. The 400th time I've interviewed him.
Yeah, probably 50
I mean,
times.
What do you guys have to say at this point?
Well, it's funny. Like,
you guys should just consummate.
First of all, he's a super nice guy, but he's also a massive movie fan. So, like, we'll chat sometimes on Twitter just about, like, movies that are out. And he goes to the movies all the time. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, after the press conference, we hung out while he was eating lunch, and we were just talking about random movies like Ready Player One and A Quiet Place. He was telling me his next projects that he was doing. Super cool guy. I mean, I always love.
You know, The Rock is considering running for political office, right? And in this climate, over the it's been for 20 years. I mean, Jesse Ventura was governor of Minnesota. Schwarzenegger was governor of California. Trump is president. If The Rock ever got significant, Kevin could be like Secretary of State or something.
Well, first of all, Rock has, I've asked him about it before. He's always said, like, the reason people are asking him to do this or talk about it is because of the current political climate. But in a Rolling Stone interview he just did recently, it's not going to be anytime soon. I mean, he definitely has I think that was a whole thing that came out of just people being upset with current politics. I think people were just saying, oh, The Rock would be cool. And I don't think he genuinely thinks he
anybody
will do it right
with
now.
Any Q rating is considering running for office.
I mean, there are reports that he has put out feelers, like legitimate feelers who are looking into it.
Right. Well,
polling.
Right. I think the most famous people in the world, the Oprahs, the Rocks, they're all considering it now.
But even Oprah said that it's not in her DNA at the current moment. I mean, I don't think that. And with Trump specifically, I think people talk about the idea that does he even like being president? That's one of those other things. Is like, you know, it's a tough job. I mean, I think it's the
worst job in the world, but I think he does like the
awful.
Power of it. Of course, I think he loves it. Of course, he does.
All right, so get to the Quiet
Place.
Let's
go to Quiet Place. I want to see this movie.
Yeah, this is what an amazing film. This movie is directed by John Krasinski. So if you ever saw a movie, if you ever saw The Office, obviously you know Jim from The Office. But he's a really phenomenal filmmaker. He This is his third directorial film. The basic concept is, as you see in the trailers, it's a post-apocalyptic world, essentially. It opens up on day 89, and we meet a family. John Krasinski and his wife, Emily Blunt, play the parents, and they have three kids. And there's these creatures, these monsters, these horrifying, terrible, disgusting monsters that are tracking down people based solely on sound. So nothing about, they can't see. So any sounds that are made, they're attracted to that, a loud sound specifically. So essentially, you're tiptoeing around the movie with the characters. Like, they're literally tiptoeing through sequences. They're not wearing shoes. Every sound could kill them, essentially. So that kind of creates an interesting thing for the audience, specifically because it's such a quiet film in general. You find yourself breathing differently, eating your popcorn differently, eating your candy differently, because every sound you make can affect the audience that is watching the movie as well. Krasinski is incredible. It's a very effective horror movie. It's 90 minutes. It'll keep you on the edge of your seat. The concept is really cool, too, because, first of all, one of the children in the film, she's deaf. She's deaf in real life as well. So there's a lot of interesting sound design where we go from outside sound to inside her mindset and what she's hearing, which is really, really effective as well. Emily Blunt does a brilliant job. If you've seen the trailers, you know it gets pretty dark and pretty messed up. But it's not just a horror movie. It's actually a family film. And I think you guys, as parents, when you watch it, you're going to be interested in the concept of what parents would do to protect their kids and just as far as they would go to do that. And I think that's kind of what the movie taps into. So I'm not a parent, so I watch it from a different perspective, but I feel like you guys will see it differently than I do. But
are there other characters in the movie besides that family?
No, I don't want to spoil anything, but I will say this. 99% of the movie is just them.
Just the family.
So
do they ever show the creatures? Do they actually show the creatures?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it in the trailers.
Oh, yeah?
And the cool thing about the movie is they don't really... I hate when a movie tries to just completely over-tell you things about the story. So, for example, like they don't really get into what the creatures are. It's more about just the survival of what's happening. It starts off on day 89, and then we jump forward to day 452 of the post-apocalyptic era, but we don't really get into what caused. We kind of get like glimpses and newspaper clippings of it, mm-hmm. but the movie's more about the survival. My only issue I have with the movie, and I'm curious, Jason, if you feel the same way when you watch it, because of the lack of dialogue, there is dialogue, but very minimal. It's mostly through sign language and some subtitles. The director, Krasinski, had to kind of give you visual cues throughout the movie that kind of made you think about things. So, for example, a camera will go down to a certain element and go, okay, hey, this is going to be an important piece to know later on in the story. To me, that kind of called out the fact that it was a movie. Like, they were kind of like showing you things, and I get why they did it, and you'll see what I mean. I'll give you one hint. It deals with a nail. There's a nail that has something to do with the movie, and I'm curious, Jason, if that bothers you or if it just kind of like played into the storytelling. But
I don't know, that was the only thing. I got to see it first. The fact that it's only 90 minutes is good because I do like dialogue, but yeah. If it's a short movie, I won't mind it as much.
It's really well done. I mean, listen, Krasinski, when you were in these moments with the actual intensity and the creatures are attacking or trying to attack them, it is mind-blowingly intense. Like they're it's I'm not kidding you. I'm not doing a bit. When you're sitting in the theater, you actually start breathing less,
right?
Because you don't want to give their presence away. Even though that sounds crazy, but you get into the movie so much that you almost play around with your own sounds.
I'm into the creature movies. There. I'm into the creature. I love the aliens. What was the movie that what was the movie?
Cloverfield.
Cloverfield. Yeah, Cloverfield. I like Cloverfield. I like Walking Dead. I'm into that stuff.
And this is a little different. This is almost kind of like Jaws in the sense that the creatures aren't shown a lot.
So it's suspenseful.
But when they're shown, it's effective. I mean, famously, when Spielberg was making Jaws, the shark kept breaking down. So he had to minimize how much shark he showed in the movie. And that ended up becoming a brilliant tool because you never really saw the shark that much. So it actually made it more intense. So when you actually see the creatures in A Quiet Place, it's for a reason. Like, it's not gratuitous. It's very, very well done. I gave it a 4 out of 5. Again, I went 1 point down only because of I didn't like some of the foreshadowing. It kind of called, like, it basically, to me, at times it went, hey, This is an important thing. Make sure you don't remember. Don't forget about this later on. It's going to come back and be important.
Right, so let's get to blockers. Yeah. Give a 4 out of 5 to Quiet Place. Blockers to me looks funny. Look, it's probably stupid. John Cena's in the movie. Tell us about blockers.
Yeah, it's like a reversal on American Pie, essentially. So American Pie was a movie about teenage guys having a pact to lose their virginity on prom night. So this time around, it's three teenage girls who make a sex pact to lose their virginity on prom night. So
why is that 10 times
about
more
this,
horrible?
No, it's awful.
So that's actually... So, Eric, your reaction is actually the biggest message in the movie. So the message of the movie essentially comes down to it's a female director. And it's an interesting thing because when guys vow to lose their virginity, it's like they get celebrated, or it's like, oh, it's cool, it's a cool thing, right?
It's just more accepted, of course.
Right. But when girls do it, it's looked down upon according to the actual movie itself. That's the message the movie's portraying.
It's not that it's looked down upon, it's just that for dads it's soul crushing.
Right.
Yeah. It's the worst thought in the world is what it is.
Right. And I'm not saying that's my perspective. I'm just saying that's the movie. That's the message the movie's putting forward. Right. Is like why is it less acceptable?
Yeah.
Right. So so you have the parents. They end up finding a text chain between the girls, essentially saying what they're going to be doing. I can't imagine you guys as dads. It's like your worst nightmare. So John Cena plays one of the fathers. Leslie Mann's one of the fathers, and Ike Barinholtz is one of the fathers.
Leslie Mann's actually a mother.
Mother, sorry. Anyways, I'm on 2 hours of sleep. I got home 3 hours ago. They basically go out and try to stop them. That's the whole point of the movie. It's R-rated. It's super raunchy. But to a point where it actually got raunchy and it felt unnecessary. There's a scene with John Cena and a beer element. I can't get into it on the air. It's too graphic. It just didn't need to be as graphic as it was. I'm okay with raunchy humor when it makes sense to the storyline. But I will say, I mean, Jason, you guys as fathers, it's a crazy thing to think about your kids going to prom. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine how horrifying that must be just as a parent. I don't know how you guys do it.
Well, at this point, my son has prom tonight, and it's been drilled in by, you know, his coaches, by his teachers, by his parents, you know, to just be safe. That's the number one thing. You know, that's the biggest thing.
Will you be like worried all night? Will you be like staying up? I mean, first of all, I don't even know how you let your kid go to school. I would be worried about that to begin with. But just in general, like, I can't imagine being a dad.
Very conscious of the day.
There.
Very conscious of the day and what's going on. Of course. Of course.
Yeah. But the movie kind of plays into that idea, Jason. You guys, just the reactions you guys had, just knowing that these kids are having this sex pact and they're going to do that. The movie's funny at times. I think it worked emotionally. I thought John Cena did a great job. But it didn't, you know, nothing about it was memorable to a point where I'm going to go back and watch it. But it is, when you're watching it, it is very funny.
What's the rating?
3.5 out of 5.
3.5.
All right.
Never heard that rating before.
Let me know. Text me over the weekend after you see Chappaquiddick.
I'm going to watch Chappaquiddick on Sunday. So I'll
text
you Sunday.
How many of these movies are you actually watching at home like that? Because as you say, it's different. The cinematic experience, and if you're going to review a movie that you see at home on, even if you have a nice home theater, it's not the same.
I'm actually 100% against watching movies at home that are in the theaters. It's actually the reason I'm watching Chappaquiddick that way is because of my schedule, my travel schedule, and I'm actually going home to visit my brother who had a baby.
I get
recently.
It. So how often do you do this? And not very often?
Not very often at all. No, I actually make it a point to go to a movie theater. It sounds hypocritical of me that I'm going to be watching Chappaquiddick that way, but it's only because I want to review the film because, you know, Jason wants to know how it is and my people here want to know how it is. So that's my only way of watching it prior to give the review. So, no, 99.9% of the time I go to a theater.
Okay, I thought it was rare, too, because I know what a purist you are.
All right, Kevin, we got to run.
Yeah.
All right, have a good
Follow
weekend.
Follow him on Twitter at Kevin McCarthy TV. You can watch him on Fox and Fox and
JP.
Friends Nashville.
Yeah, see you.
Thank you,
That's Kevin. Join us next. We will get into the Masters with Jaime Diaz from the Golf Channel here on the Junkies.
Papa.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. Remember, 7:55, 8:55, 9:55, your chance to win Capitals playoff tickets. They have just one game left in the regular season. Playoffs are upon us, so we'll give away those Caps playoff tickets. 7:55, 8:55, 9:55. But joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse hotline to talk some Masters. Insider for Golf Channel's Live from the Masters. News coverage this week. It's Jaime Diaz, who's on site at Augusta National. Good morning, Jaime.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Long read your work. Congratulations on the new official sort of full-time gig there at the Golf Channel.
Yeah, you're doing a great job, by the way.
Hey, that's nice of you. Thanks. I'm a rookie, but I get a lot of support from people.
Doing a great job. You look like a natural.
Awesome.
Hey, first things first, before we talk about yesterday, give us an update on Saturday, what the forecast looks like, because that could be the great equalizer depending on how much rain they get, when it hits, you know, how windy it gets. I mean, it kind of sucks that it's going to rain that much in one day. But
are they going to get it in?
Yeah, are they going to play it? You know, give us an update on that.
You know, I might be the worst weatherman in history. So, I mean, I've just known it's going to be a little bit, it's going to be wet. And, you know, this golf course is so hard and fast right now. It's almost like they anticipated getting a lot of water. And I don't think it's going to change the nature of the game that much. I mean, it certainly make the course easier, there's no doubt. But they have all these sub-air systems which suck all the water out of the greens.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know exactly, I haven't looked that carefully. Probably you have more, you know, how severe it might be that it actually might stop play. But if they just get a lot of water over the, you know, over the night or in the morning, and they can still play after it stops, I think, you know, we've seen a lot of rain at the Masters over the years, a lot of times, and certainly, you know, it makes it a little easier. But you never see the golf course play really soft like a tour event would when it gets soft, gets soaked. So they just have a lot of precautions and infrastructure and just the state of the art stuff that keeps the golf course fast and firm.
Yeah.
So the story of the day, as much as some of us wanted it to be Tiger, is Jordan Spieth, who kind of reminds us of his greatness, even though the struggles with the putter have been well documented. He kind of reminds us that, hey, wait a second, I play pretty well here. I think Jason Sobel tweeted that, and a lot of you guys I'm sure noticed, that out of the 17 rounds that he's played here at Augusta, he's led after 9 of them, which is just incredible and sort of mind-boggling. So he does it again yesterday, drops a 66 on him. You know, I was talking to the boys before the show. Jordan is the kind of guy, even though the first round leaders often don't win this. I think it's only happened twice. He's one of them. He is the kind of guy, though, at this course that could run away with this if he puts together another good round today.
Yes. I mean, he's done it. And I don't know that he's actually as primed for a runaway victory as he might have been in 2015.
Right.
But he's playing a little better. I think what's really interesting is that, first of all, these guys all point, especially the elite players, point for the major. And Augusta's the longest run up to the major, and you know Jordan's been thinking about it for 6 months.
Right.
And he's had some issues, uncharacteristic putting issues, and you know he's been working on those. I would say, you know, in reading a lot about the game over the years, and you know biographies like of Jack Nicklaus, that sort of thing, you realize these guys. It's not unusual for little. Many crises to pop up before majors as guys try to peak. Mm-hmm. You know, a game is very rare in golf, and this is a bigger issue for Jordan and probably he's had in a while because his putter's always considered so great. But he's been working through this the last, you know, 5-6 tournaments and making progress. I mean, you know, in fits and starts, and when a guy like him misses 3-footers, people all notice and kind of go, "Wow, you know, that's scary. That may, is he losing his gift?" But he, you know, just kind of stayed the course, and I think there's just like a little inner clock with great champions where they just get it together at the right time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just kind of like cramming for a test or something. And he, you know, here it came on Thursday morning at the Masters, and he was ready. Somehow he got ready. And I don't know if it's going to stick. I think it will as far as making those putts. It's really important here in any tournament actually with tour players. If they start missing 4-footers, the percentages say, you know, it's just not going to win. probably can only miss three or four at the most the whole tournament. And you know, you'll see those stats sometimes inside of 10 feet. The guys are 61 out of 63, 61 out of 62. And that's what it takes. So Augusta's a little more challenging on short putts. But I think as long as Jordan doesn't start missing short putts, he's got the kind of game, which is kind of counterintuitive to some people because it's not a pure power game. But this is a really a touch golf course. You've got to have really incredible finesse around the greens with the long putting and with chipping. And we saw that yesterday on 18 when he saved bogey. That's his gift. And so, but to do that, you got to convert the little 4-footer after a great chip. If he does that, I think he's in very good position to just keep this going.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it, Jaime, is, you know, if you're a great putter, you're a great putter. And yeah, you're going to go through some slumps. I mean, great hitters go through slumps. Great shooters in basketball go through slumps. It's just not going to last. And he showed that yesterday. And his iron play was just stupid. I mean, he's just, when he gets dialed in with his irons, I mean, he's really tough to beat. But
he's very, excuse me, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, to birdie five consecutive holes yesterday on the back, I mean, you have to take advantage of 13 and 15, but I mean, that's just incredible golf.
Well, the timing of it, that's, I mean, you'll see five, you know, you'll see five in a row from a lot of guys, but this is the major, this is the moment. And that's what matters. I think he, you know, he got it together at the right time. And that was severely in doubt, you know, coming into this tournament. I don't think anybody had him as the favorite. And he would have been generally because of that, the stat that you mentioned earlier, how often he's led here, which is he's already led more than or the same amount as Tiger Woods has ever led the Masters. It's really amazing. And it's not an accident anymore. He's got something at this golf course. But, you know, as you said, great putters are great putters. But, you know, great putters putt great at the great moments.
Right, right.
And, you know, and that's what he did. And that's not easy to kind of get your mind right after having, you know, lost some confidence over the last couple of months. So I think Jordan got something special as a champion, as similar to what Tiger and Jack and, you know, just all-time great. I think Faldo was incredible at preparing for majors, and Jordan has a similar quality.
Yeah. All right, so what are your thoughts on Tiger yesterday? You know, it looked like it could get real ugly there after he hit the ball in the water on 12, but he was able to get a couple birdies after that. The birdie on 16 was huge. I was just really surprised, Jaime, that he wasn't able to, you know, birdie any of the par fives. You have to do that.
Yes. I mean, I remember his close confidant, Nota Begay, was saying if Tiger's the win here, he needs to play the par fives and 12 under. I mean, that's an estimate, and it, maybe he could win without being 12 under, but I think what he was saying is you got to take advantage of the par fives. He always did when he's won here the four previous times. And yeah, I think yesterday, you know, it looked really dire after he hit it in the water on 12. I want to look it up. I don't know how many times he's actually been in the water on 12. I can't remember one.
Yeah.
So that was an amazing mishap there. But I think the bogey save was huge. I think it could have gone really south with a double there. And as you say, birdie 16, he kind of got it back. He's still in the tournament. I don't think he's playing well enough to win at the moment.
Yeah,
he could. No, you know, this is how, if he plays at this level, he's not going to win the tournament. He's got to step it up somehow. And you know, we've seen some tremendous golf from him in this comeback at times. Can he access it? Can he do what Jordan Spieth did and put it together at the right time? That's the issue.
Yeah, I mean, look, the expectations are outrageous, but it's because of his resume and what he's done, and the fact that you know he has a second place finish in his like fifth tournament back is just insane. I mean, this is like his sixth tournament back. In basically 3 years, our expectations are so crazy, but it's because of who he is. I mean, what he's been able to do so far in this comeback, I mean, I know I'm shocked by it. Are you shocked by where he is at this point?
You know, I never – once I saw him swing at the Bahamas and the freedom was back in his body,
yeah.
Then I thought, you know, what's holding him back? Because the talent is there, and as long as his body – you know, can allow him to do what his gift gives him, then he's close to being back, in my mind, pretty quickly. But I think the issue here, and we'll never know about unless he, you know, were to open up, which I don't think, you know, it's not in his interest to do that, is how he feels mentally, how he feels in terms of confidence, how he feels when he gets back in the heat. Is he the same guy? And I don't know. It's nobody's ever exactly the same guy, but I don't think it comes back as easily as the physical. I think he's way farther along physically than he is mentally. Mm-hmm. And that's a guess, of course, but I'm just looking at the big moments. I mean, at Bay Hills, you know, He's charging there. He's playing incredibly, and he hits an OB on 16. I mean, he would never have done that, in his prime.
But that's also a product of just being so wayward off the tee, which has been a problem that has plagued him for a decade. I mean, it just has.
Yeah, okay. He's been wayward off the tee at times. I wouldn't say ever as much as he's been the last 3 or 4 years.
Right.
But when the big moment came, as he talks about, he knows where to miss it. He knows what his miss is, and he knows how to keep it in play or someplace where he can still – and he can, you know, get it around a golf course with his B game better than anybody who ever lived, probably.
No doubt.
He and Nicklaus share that. But that mistake was fatal. He could not do that. I mean, and win the tournament. And he didn't used to do those things. I'm not saying that this is a permanent condition, and I'm not giving him credit for coming back and being here on a short, a very short period of time. But still, he's Tiger Woods. That was a mistake that I think is telling.
Yeah.
And, you know, and tinning in the water on 12 yesterday to me was telling.
Yeah.
So you think those are mental breakdowns more than just sort of physical rust?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, I think so. In other words, maybe it's mental rust, you know, to put it a different way. He's just not quite used to being in the heat. And as he gets, as he progresses, as we saw in his comeback here, he's progressed better on Sundays. And I think is the final measure, because if he's going to win a major, he's going to have to hold up on Sunday.
I didn't think he looked comfortable. I'm sorry, Jason. I didn't think he looked comfortable until about the 14th hole, to be honest with you.
Well, I also thought he looked a little worn out in the post-round presser, but that's just my opinion. All right, we only have like 3 minutes left. We're talking to Jaime Diaz from Golf Channel. He's down there at Augusta doing a great job. I want to ask you about a couple more players. Just give me your quick thoughts. Ricky Fowler had a really good, he birdied 16 and birdied 17 to get him to red numbers, which was huge for him. Mickelson, same deal, birdied 15, birdied 16. So they're within striking distance. Rory played really well in the back. Give me a few names that you think could make a serious move today.
Well, the guy who's most intriguing to everybody is Rory, because if he putts anything like he did at Bay Hill and drives it the way he's driving it, that's an impossible almost combination to beat. Excuse me, I got a leaf blower here. Excuse me.
No problem. Away from it. No problem.
I feel like Rory is in many people's mind the favorite. I kind of felt like Bubba was a guy who is going to be dangerous and may still be, because he played. You know, he's won twice this year and he's won twice at Augusta. Phil is putting as well as probably he's ever put in his life, which is quite amazing for a 47-year-old guy. And he's just peaked. I mean, he's just so youthful right now. He's so enthusiastic. He loves the game as much as he's ever loved it, and he's playing like that week after week. So he's dangerous, and he knows how to play this place, obviously. Ricky is a guy who he's been kind of knocked a little for not closing out tournaments. I continue to think he's getting I believe he continues to get better. He's getting better at a rate maybe slower than some of the guys who he's compared to a lot, but he's getting better. And, you know, he's only 28, I believe. And you know, there's plenty of time here. I'm not saying you just, you know, wait. He's working hard and he's trying hard. But I think his prime may come early 30s. You know, not to say he's going to win a lot of majors. I just think he's very capable. And, you know, just keep tending to what you're doing. Working with Butch Harmon, working out your flaws. I think one of the things that hurts Ricky is he does seem to make the strategic mistake now and then and make a big number, make a double. And, you know, that's something you just got to get out of your game. When Hank Haney was coaching Tiger, I mean, three putts, doubles, penalties. Those were like, you know, the mortal sins. Do not do those. If Tiger didn't do those things, he almost always won.
Right.
Of course, that's Tiger and he had that much game. But you just can't give strokes back. That's the key. I think that's what Jordan Spieth does better than anybody when he's on is he just does not give back. He doesn't make bogeys. He always finds a way to make par, keep his momentum going. And then when the birdies come, boom, you know, they all count. He keeps his birdies, so to speak.
All right, Jaime, really appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Have fun today.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Take care.
All right, thank you, Jaime.
I was just looking up his resume while you were talking to him. I guess he was a writer. He's been a writer for 30 years. And
Golf Digest,
Golf World, all over the place. He's won like the Golf Writers Award Best Writer of the Year like 10 times.
Oh, he's a legend.
No, he's great. Yeah. He's great for their broadcast, too. Really
so good. That was Jaime Diaz talking some Masters. John Feinstein, best-selling author, will join us coming up at 8. We got the morning skate at 8:40. And remember, your chance to win Caps playoff tickets 7:55, 8:55, and 9:55, all right here on the Junkies. Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. Remember, Capitals playoff tickets. We're giving them away all day on the station. But on the Junkies, 7:55, 8:55, 9:55, listen for your cue to call in. I believe we're giving them away next week, too. Is that correct?
Monday and Tuesday, I think.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. So thank you to the Washington Capitals for giving us some playoff tickets. We'll give away a pair of tickets coming up in 12 minutes.
By the way, Drabby, didn't I get like a Caps credential somewhere when I was away?
Yeah, it's in the storage over here.
I'm psyched. Yeah, ship it.
Are you going to go to a playoff game?
Yeah, damn right. Every year I go to a playoff game.
All right. Nice.
Yeah, I want my credential.
Which one do you want to go to?
I don't know.
Game one?
I don't know. I have to look at the schedule. But I definitely want it.
Yeah, I have my media credential behind me with TJ Oshie.
TJ Oshie.
Yeah.
I believe on the cover.
No.
The pictures that we took back when we were in Lanham, those are going to be apparently our media pictures for a decade.
Yeah.
TJ Oshie.
Yeah, you look younger, so keep it. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So we didn't get to it earlier, and we are going to have Luke Thomas on the show at 9:20 to give us some insight. But one of the biggest stories in the world of sports, I believe if you go to ESPN.com, it's the number one story right now over the Masters, is Conor McGregor.
It's not bigger than the Masters.
And Conor McGregor, I mean, I'm just telling you,
it might be the most recent one that they typed
on ESPN.
But it's not bigger than the Masters.
And Conor McGregor yesterday went nuts. So there's a UFC pay-per-view in Brooklyn.
I'm going to just bet half our audience doesn't even know who Conor McGregor is.
The Brooklyn, The Brooklyn pay-per-view was going to be headlined by this guy, Khabib, against Ferguson. Ferguson,
I know,
got hurt.
Nobody knows who those guys are.
Yes, and he got replaced by Max Holloway. But Conor McGregor has been inactive since he had the fight with Floyd Mayweather, and people are wondering if he's ever going to return to the UFC. And it was rumored just a few days ago, Dana White said, it's a lock, he's going to fight this year. Dana White, the UFC commissioner.
You say that like the day before? Like
I think
2 days
one
ago.
Or 2 days before. He said,
literally a day before.
He will return to the UFC. And a lot of people thought, well, he's going to be stripped of his title. They're going to give a title to this guy, Khabib, if he wins.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going to come back to fight Khabib, potentially, for the championship. Well, yesterday, he got in this confrontation, which might keep him out of the UFC, where there's a bus with some of the fighters on, and apparently Khabib's camp had gotten into some sort of beef with one of his boys, who is also on the card. He's a guy who always loses all the time, but he's somebody that Conor trains with.
Khabib?
His name is Artem Lobov. So this,
buddy. This is one of McGregor's buddy. All
right. Right. All right. So Khabib's camp gets into something with Conor's camp, and
they're
then
bitter.
Conor's response
is, I know nobody knows Khabib.
They back to the bus.
Of course not.
And he throws like a dolly at the bus, which smashes a window, which then the glass gets in, I don't know if it was in the eye, but scratches up a guy who's one of the main fighters on the card to the point that they've had to remove him. They had to remove another guy, and they took Conor's boy and took him off the card, canceling three fights from Conor's actions. He's currently in custody. Had to spend, I guess, a night in jail. He's in custody. He's going to have a hearing
probably
later
where
today.
Belongs.
And here's my question.
Why'd he go crazy?
Is he just going crazy? Is he on PR.
Drugs? Is it just a show? Is it just a show?
It's PR.
Is this a bit of a show to kind of add
get
to his
interest?
Lore? And kind of a WWE type stunt.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Here's what Dana White said after. Dana White sounds like he's had it with him.
What do you make of? I mean, why?
I mean,
what do you make of this?
Do you want to be in business with Conor McGregor right now? Do you want to chase this guy around for interviews and buy his fights? Do you? I don't think anybody is going to want to right now. No, I think everybody's going to be pretty disgusted with Conor McGregor right now. Listen, you don't like Khabib and you don't like what happened or whatever, then fight Khabib. You can come in here and you can do it legally. This fight's happening Saturday. We could have talked and made the Khabib fight right after. You could do whatever you wanted to Khabib within the limits of the rules of you know, fighting. But you want to grab 30 f***ing friends and come down here and do what you did today, it's disgusting. And I don't think anybody is going to be, huge Conor McGregor fans after this.
I don't know. He has Ireland with him. That's the thing about, he sells out and he has a country behind him. They're not going anywhere. He may lose some casual fans, but I don't think he loses them. Now, I do think he's potentially on drugs.
Did anybody on the bus get off the bus and try to fight McGregor?
Not that I saw.
Conor ran away. Oh, he did.
How big is he?
He's
5'7".
Probably walks around 175.
That's pretty big. How tall is he?
5'9", 5'10".
Is he nuts, or was it just a PR stunt to get people interested?
Both.
I don't know. Drab, what's your take?
Both.
Drab is into it. He texted me yesterday right when the news kind of broke. Because everybody wants to see Conor return to the UFC because he went through an incredible run for like 2 years, yeah, predicting knockouts and then doing it when it wasn't expected.
Yeah. I think UFC's in a tough situation here because Conor's their cash cow. And yeah, he hasn't fought in a while, but they're waiting for him to return. And he's a megastar. I mean, and he's acting like an absolute idiot right now.
He's a lunatic. Right?
And no, I don't think it's fake. I think Conor's done this stuff before. Yeah, I mean, a little bit is hype, but he's got this edge to him where he goes overboard and he can't control.
He's promoting his brand, his crazy UFC brand.
But what was he upset about in particular?
He's upset because he's got his group of friends and this other fighter that's in the same weight class as Conor cornered the guy, his friend, in a hotel and was slapping him and saying, "Where's your boy Conor? Where's your boy Conor?"
They're
and
all trying to get Conor out of retirement because they know that's a payday for him.
They all want
to
fight him.
They're talking ass towards him.
And slapping him and doing all this stuff, posted on the internet. Right. Conor saw in Ireland, hopped on a plane, flew to New York City, went to the Barclays Center, called out Habib, said, "Get off the bus." He didn't get off the bus, so he went crazy and started throwing a dolly through the bus window.
Oh, so he was in Ireland when this all went down.
Yes, he got on a plane with all his buddies and flew to the United States and went crazy.
I wonder if
Dana White paid for the flight.
You understand? He also apparently got into a fight with somebody that is high up in the Irish mafia. Mm-hmm. Like, he got into some sort of beef with, like, a drug cartel lord in Ireland. Like, he's nuts. By the way, Khabib, I know nobody's heard of him. I just tweeted this at Junks Radio, where you can follow me at GlassJoeJP. A video surfaced of him when he was 7 years old. So he's Russian, where his dad had him training in wrestling with an actual bear. Mm. That is nuts.
All right, let's go to Dave in D.C. Dave, what's up? You're on with the Junkies. How are you?
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Hey, Dave.
Good morning,
what's up,
buddy?
What's up? What's up? Hey, I could be wrong, but I just think is a bunch of hype right now, man. You got to, you know, garner more interest for this bout or whatever. Conor McGregor coming back, just because I think Floyd Mayweather saved boxing, man. Plus, there's a couple of heavyweights in the boxing realm, like Anthony Joshua, and you got Deontay Wilder. I think people are turning their heads towards boxing just for a little bit right now. They just want to hype up MMA for a second.
It's possible, but I don't think that if it's a work and if it's a fake, that you have guys ultimately getting hurt and having to be hospitalized because they have glass and cuts all over their body to the point that the commission in New York cancels their fights.
Put it this way. It's not fake in the sense that it happened, and I'm sure it's real emotion and he's real anger, but he knows what he's doing. He knows he's acting like a fool, but it's also going to promote the brand.
Probably so.
Yeah. It's all kind of orchestrated.
This
is gearing up, obviously, towards some sort of Conor McGregor fight. Obviously.
Right, some monster super
fight. And by the way, haven't the UFC pay-per-views been basically struggling? They've been pooped for quite a while now.
They've lost a lot of their stars. John Jones suspended.
Right.
Conor McGregor has been active and boxed. By the way, let me tell you something. I saw a Deontay Wilder fight. He's undefeated. They're trying to hype him up like he's the next big thing.
Is that the heavyweight?
He's a heavyweight.
I saw him fight once, and he was a monster.
He's a monster. Mike Tyson would have eaten him up.
Oh,
in a
I'm sure, of course, I'm sure.
And Anthony Joshua just fought. He's, I think, British. He beat
The guy I saw him fight would look like one of the security guards downstairs. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I'm not going to compare this guy to the great heavyweights of all time, but I did see him fight.
Let's go to Chris in Quantico. Wants to chime in.
Chris, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Sup?
Doing great.
Hey, I'm an avid UFC fan. I do watch a lot of Conor's fights. I'm kind of 50-50 in terms of being a fan of him, but also wanting to see him lose against certain fighters. The thing with him is Dana White is the one who's at fault in this because Dana White is the one who made him who he was. Conor McGregor wasn't like this from day one when he first came to the UFC. And the other part is the other reason why Conor's mad right now is because they say that whoever does win the fight this weekend is the champion, and Conor McGregor is stripped of his title.
Well, he shouldn't have laid back and been inactive for so long.
Oh, I know.
He was enjoying his money. You can't blame him?
I 100% totally agree with you. But the thing is, Conor can't have both. He can't lay back and expect to keep the belt. You know what I mean?
What did McGregor make off of the Mayweather fight?
Over $100 million.
He made $100 million.
I don't know why.
Why is he
going to
jump back? Yeah, why would you ever do it?
Well, because part of this thing is he said he was a fighter. Like, he was like Bruce Lee. Like, he wanted to fight, and he wanted to fight different elements. That's why he wanted to do boxing, bought into it.
I'm just not surprised he took this time off.
Do we really think Floyd is going to do this UFC stuff? He's not, right?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure he would be forced into a tap out within a minute.
Yeah, I think it would be just humiliating for him.
Why would he do that?
I mean, it'd be so dumb. Let's go to James Aldi. Quickly. James, quickly.
Hey, good morning, guys. This guy's brilliant. Connor's brilliant. He hasn't been relative. No one's talked about him since Floyd. It's all PR. If you Google his name, a new documentary came out on Netflix earlier this week about Conor McGregor and his fighting career and his life. So it's no one's been talking about him. He comes out, does this, goes to jail for a day, charges will get dropped, and everyone's going to watch his Netflix. It's all PR. He learned from Floyd.
So you believe mad genius, not just an idiot.
Exactly.
I don't know. Dana White said maybe he's on drugs. I wouldn't be surprised. Money can change you, especially that kind of money. All right, coming up next, best-selling author, Washington Post columnist John Feinstein. Remember, Jay Beagle from The Caps joins us for the Morning Skate at 8:40.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.